Hello and welcome to All Indians Matter. I am Ashraf Engineer. Earlier this year, the Parliamentary Standing Committee on Urban Development observed that waste management is becoming a major issue. Its worry is well-founded. India's burgeoning population, especially in urban centers, has resulted in a stark increase in the quantity of waste generated, and it is expected to increase further. It is estimated that India generates 65 million tons of municipal solid waste a year, of which 62 million tons comprises organic waste and recyclables like paper, plastic, wood, glass, etc. Here's the worrying part. Only 75 to 80% of it gets collected, and of this, only 22 to 28% is treated. By 2031, India's municipal solid waste generation is expected to reach 165 million tons. Waste collection, however, is unlikely to keep up. It ranges from 70 to 90% in metros, but is under 50% in smaller cities.
All Indians matter.
We have on the show Sangeeta Venkatesh, an expert in solid waste management. Sangeeta led the solid waste management group of a citizens' initiative, Whitefield Rising, spending long hours working within communities as well as corporate India to formulate guidelines and methods on how to manage their waste. She was awarded the Swayam Siddha Award by the HCG Group of Hospitals for her contribution to creating awareness about solid waste management. She was also awarded the Inspire Beyond Motherhood Awards 2020 in the social service category. She is currently lead corporate communication at Eco Paradigm, an environment engineering company. She was previously research director of Sociotech Innovation for Change, a social enterprise focusing on sanitation and waste management with an emphasis on school sanitation. Sangeeta has also co-authored a book for middle school children called The Waste Issue and conducts workshops on solid waste management for them. Welcome to the show, Sangeeta.
Thank you, Ashraf, for that delightful introduction. And it's my absolute pleasure to be having this conversation with you.
Yes, the pleasure's all ours. Sangeeta, I'll get right to it. One of the byproducts of India's rapid urbanization and economic progress has been expanding waste generation. Is this inevitable or is there a way to keep it in check?
So that's a great question to open this conversation, Ashraf. The way we are going now, it shows no sign of stopping. Waste generation is growing exponentially. And I will tell you why both urbanization and economic progress are contributing to this increased generation of solid waste. Urbanization, as you know, is now a global phenomenon, but its ramifications are more pronounced in developing countries like India. What we have seen in this country is that other than the high rate of population growth, there are declining opportunities in rural areas, and people have aspirations. These aspirations, you know, the rural population then wants to shift from a stagnant and sometimes low-paying agriculture sector that also has to contend with the vagaries of nature to more paying urban occupations. And this has largely contributed to urbanization that is unrestricted, leading to an urban sprawl. Now, urbanization may not necessarily be a bad thing, and we have so many fantastic urban planning professionals. But urban planning has to keep pace, especially with respect to a few key areas like affordable housing, transport and mobility, power, water, healthcare, and last but certainly not the least, waste management. So, in a nutshell, what I have to tell you is the amount of waste we produce is way, way, way more than what we can currently handle. And that is why you see trash spilling onto streets in the most unhygienic way possible.
And what are the major sources of solid waste?
So the major source of solid waste is from households and residential complexes. And that is known as municipal solid waste, which consists of your kitchen waste, like all that what you said in your introduction, you know, your paper, plastic, various types of packaging, sanitary waste, and stuff like that. In addition, there is construction debris, waste from the streets, hotels, commercial complexes, and that is another source. But if you want to categorize them separately, then you have, wet waste, which is biodegradable. And then you have the non-biodegradable waste, that is dry waste, e-waste, sanitary waste, biomedical waste, hazardous waste, which, you know, consists of toxic chemicals, corrosive acids, And of course, like I mentioned, inert waste or debris that is non-reactive, waste that doesn't decompose or it cannot be also recycled, but it can be safely be disposed in a landfill. And this includes materials such as sand, concrete, and dust.
Mm. Given the numbers that I cited earlier, it's almost like a tsunami of solid waste. So why have municipalities been unable to keep pace?
So the numbers are indeed very high. And a 2018 World Bank study showed that India produces 277 million tons of solid waste every year. I don't recollect the exact numbers that you quoted, which must be the more recent one, and which is likely to touch nearly 390 million tons in 2030. And this is a conservative estimate.
Yeah, I think there's a huge gap between the numbers that you are citing and what the parliamentary committee is citing. That's a number, that's the source of my numbers.
So, I mean, it must be the more recent one. So we'll stick with that. So it is, the bottom line is, forget the numbers. So the bottom line is, it is one of the world's top waste generating nations. Even though that the per capita waste generated is below the global average, which is about 0.6 kilograms per person. But with urbanization and economic progress, as we just spoke about, this is bound to increase. And like any other infrastructure, you need to plan a decade in advance.
If I'm glad you mentioned infrastructure, because my next question was going to be, does this require different kinds of investment in infrastructure?
Oh, yes. There has to be an immense attention to detail given to treat waste. And amongst us environmentalists, we are always trying to see how waste can be a resource and we don't view it like a kachra. Okay. And there is a precise process chain that needs to be followed in a very scientific way. And my personal vote would be for a decentralized system. And I'll explain how. Now, decentralized waste management is about each community managing and processing their waste in their locality and not sending it all to a centralized large processing facility, which often lands up, you know, in the landfill. So waste management, if you have to break it down, it involves collection, transport, processing, and disposable only if need be. So for this, what you need to do? Firstly, citizens must know that waste has to be segregated, and that awareness is so, so important. And then sanitary workers have to be trained for proper collection and transport. Now, depending on how much population a city has, there must be adequate numbers of waste processing centers. And this is where urban planning comes in, where you shouldn't have to transport the waste far away. So for instance, you know, you want to sit down and plan for a composting center or a biogas producing unit, you know, where your wet waste can be used. So you have to plan for it, and then you have to plan how the compost or the biogas can be used by other people. Like, you have to plan for the compost that it should reach the farmers. Of course, there is a policy that was implemented in the February 2016, but policies largely remain policies. And then you need to think about your dry waste. You know, you need to have dry waste collections, recycling centers, so that the dry waste can be further segregated and sent to the right recyclers, which are aplenty actually. And then sanitary waste needs to be incinerated and so on and so forth. So what I'm trying to say is infrastructure is key, very important, but more importantly, it needs to be managed and maintained well. So, you know, ideally, we need to have the vision and prepare to provide infrastructure to cater for waste for the next decade. And we have to plan for a circular economy. There is no option, or else we'll have a huge crisis.
That's a great point. And especially the point that you said about the gap between policy and execution. I think we're seeing it in every aspect of our lives in India, whether it's waste or, as we're seeing now, it's healthcare. But I wanted to actually bring up a different aspect to this whole thing also. It's not just the sheer quantity of solid waste, but it's also its characteristics, isn't it? For instance, there's a lot more e-waste today than there was a decade ago.
Yes, for sure. You know, because with consumerism, with new products being introduced into our lives, new waste is also being created. And e-waste is just one of them, you know. And India generates about 3 million tons of e-waste annually and ranks third among the e-waste producing countries after China and the US. And if you do a simple research, you will know that India is slowly turning into the world's e-waste dump yard, where we are importing about 50,000 tons of e-waste every year, and sometimes it's illegally done. And only 1.5% of this gets recycled. Now, I can't for the life of me, I really wonder why we accept dangerous waste from other countries. I don't have an answer to say on this show. I will let your listeners research on that part. But on a positive note, India is the only country in Southern Asia with e-waste legislations, with laws to manage e-waste, you know, and which mandates that only authorized dismantlers and recyclers can collect e-waste. But does that really happen is a big question.
Again, the gap between policy and execution.
Correct.
So I'm going to come back to you with another gap between policy and execution. And we had large campaigns, sanitation campaigns like Swachh Bharat, but again, they've had mixed results or have not made an impact at all. What went wrong there? Do the failures, and is it again the failure of conceptualization or is it implementation?
So, you know, it's we need to go a little back in time for this, you know, because it was only as recent as 1996. I mean, I would say 1996 is recent. So when Almitra Patel, you know, she's an environmentalist, she's an octogenarian now. She filed a landmark PIL, a public interest litigation in the Supreme Court in 1996 against the open dumping of municipal solid waste. Till then, there were no rules. And only then was the Municipal Solid Waste Management Rules drafted and published. And that was in year 2000. And later, it was then subsequently modified in 2016. So it took us this long to draft rules. Now comes the implementation. We have good laws, rules, but we need to overcome the systemic indifference that has, you know, like you said, has been plaguing many walks of our lives, and solid waste is also not spared from it. I have to tell you this, that the area of waste management can give so much of employment. It is unbelievable, you know, and it's an opportunity that we need to capitalize. And we have many private companies willing to chip in and do a good job. So if government agencies need help, get the private sector in it. For the private sector, it is their bread and butter, and there will be accountability because, you know, accountability is what we're all searching for. But that would mean you would be cutting down on the transport contractors who will ply your waste to the landfills, and they are not going to be happy. And that's a big excess. You know, there is a big money to be made there. So it's not a simple answer that I can give you in this whole scenario, you know. So because before Swachh Bharat, we had the total sanitation campaign, you know, because it's not something new, you know, it's just a modification of the TSC. Because I have been in this field since 2000, you know, so that was introduced in 1999. And that itself was built upon another program called the CSRP, which is the Central Rural Sanitation Program. You can have another campaign with yet another name, but unless we get our science right, our processes in place, our act right, it'll be yet another handbook of rules. So that is why I really advocate decentralization.
This is a terrific point. But let's talk now about the human impact of such large quantities of solid waste. What is the human impact? Could you explain to our listeners?
It is complex. But it's also very simple, because if we don't process our waste, we'll have more landfills than open spaces. Ashok, you live in Mumbai, so, and you know about the Devnar landfill, right?
Absolutely, yeah. The you know, memories of it being on fire and deliberately being set on fire come back. It's quite an apocalyptic sight.
Yes, exactly what I was coming to, because the methane gas that was emanating from all the muck caused a 10-day-long fire, you know, it's endangering lives of thousands of people. And in the same year, 2016, I have a personal experience to share, because I was in New Delhi for a conference on the occasion of World Toilet Day, which happens in November. And there, you know, along with the secretary of the Waste Pickers Association, we had taken a delegation of environmentalists from all over the world, you know, who had congregated for the conference, and to the Ghazipur landfill. Now, the Ghazipur landfill is one of the oldest and largest landfills in India, where waste has been indiscriminately dumped for over 30 years. A long story short, I couldn't sleep that night. One, because that landfill was a hill. There was a putrid leachate that was oozing out, and this would go on and continuously contaminate the nearby soil, water, and also air. And far in the distance, you could see these vultures, you know, circling the landfill. They are scavengers, huh? But more heartrending was to see a teen, a child, a mere child, trying to scavenge something out of this landfill so that he could sell it to a recycler to make money. So this is the, you know, one part of the human impact, okay? But now, of course, I've read that with the support of the Planning Commission, the landfill area is now being converted into a waste-to-energy plant by the East Delhi Waste Processing Corporation. And the garbage is also mined to convert into refuse-derived fuel. And also, I believe the Gas Authority of India is mining for methane and other gases, which is a good thing. But, you know, after that visit, we also went to a waste pickers colony nearby. And these waste pickers do human services for sorting out the dry waste in particular into categories, you know, minute categories that can be sent into recycling stream. They have a phenomenal knowledge about waste and recycling, and they are valuable asset, if I may say so, for the nation. But the condition that they live in, to put it mildly, is very, very sad. So this is the kind of impact waste has vis-a-vis human beings, according to me. In fact, this experience touched me so much that I devoted an entire chapter on waste pickers in a book that I co-authored called The Waste Issue.
Yeah, that's for the middle school students, as I mentioned earlier. But it's interesting that you mentioned the waste to energy plants. The parliamentary committee that I mentioned earlier noted that there were very few functional waste to compost plants in India, and even they were running well below capacity. And it's also said that waste to energy plants should be considered. What is your view on this?
See, I don't know why it's, functioning below capacity. We have so much of wet waste. And it's, you know, we are just trying to take the easy way out. So I don't have much experience in the waste to energy sector, honestly. But I have a colleague who has worked in the Nasik Municipal Corporation, where, you know, it's which has a good thing going. When the town set up a waste to energy plant with collaboration with his German partner and also Indian consultants. And from what I understand is that wet waste and septage that is collected daily produces biogas and subsequently about 3,300 kilowatts of electricity, which is a good thing. Why not? You know, so waste to energy in that sense is good. But what I don't like is the so-called overnight composters. You know, you just dump your wet waste and they charge your wet waste to carbon, and that is of no use. And it's a sheer waste of your valuable wet waste resource, you know. So, and the traditional composting process is of great value. And seriously, if we adopt a decentralized approach, I cannot understand why, you know, these waste to compost plants should function below capacity.
You mentioned landfills earlier. And again, on a related issue, the same parliamentary committee estimated that 1,240 hectares would be need to be acquired every year for landfills in the way that we are growing. This is a staggering number.
It is. And in my opinion, you know, we shouldn't even be discussing landfills in an age when the buzzwords are circular economy, sustainable living and all that. So these may sound as jargon, but let me just break it down in simple terms, you know. So many holidays I spent with my two grandmothers in Bangalore. So in the heart of Bangalore is a locality called Malleshwaram, a very quaint, quiet place. It used to be back then, 60s and 70s, where my paternal grandmother had a humble but cute independent house. And at the back were jackfruit and banana trees and a few cows too. So I want you all to just visualize or imagine this, that I pluck a banana from the tree, eat it, and then give the peel to one of the cows. The cow digests it, and it out comes the cow dung, which is used as a fertilizer for the banana tree, which will yield more fruit, and the cycle continues. And this is the simplest way I can explain circular economy or sustainability, which our forefathers have known all the while. A linear economy, and the contrast would be that I eat the banana, throw it in the dustbin along with the paper and plastic, and it's a big mess there, and they both cannot be recycled. And hence, it has to go into the landfill. So if we are not conscious about our daily living, you know, how much packaging we use, whether you segregate, and what kinds of products we use, and, you know, you will need, what, 1,240 hectares? It may be much more. And along with that comes, you know, you have to deal with the allied health issues. And I keep reiterating the health issues, you know, Ashraf, because of the condition we are in right now.
Yeah, which brings us back to the human impact that we spoke about earlier. So what do you think of innovative options like using plastic waste for road construction? Are these things feasible? Because we're hearing a lot about these sorts of solutions in recent times.
Engineering is really not my forte, but I've seen studies from the Tyagaraja University that seems promising. And I would like to say that we must constantly innovate, experiment, test. Why? Especially because plastic is a reality, you know, in our life, and we cannot wish it away. You know, even if you say no plastic, this and that, it's going to be there. And it also has its uses, but we have to be careful that we recycle it. Because, you know, the first piece of synthetic plastic that was made way back in 1907, it is still around. And every day we are making more of it, so much so that it is even entering the food chain. And again, we come back to the same thing, health crisis, it's going to be there. So unless we, you know, examine innovative options, it's going to be a problem. So I'm for it, actually.
Any options that you think could be particularly effective? I know you've written about bioenzymes, for instance.
So other than waste management, I really advocate a chemical-free living in our personal lives, at least, which I think is key to build up not just our immunity, but the immunity of nature. For instance, the detergents that we use goes as grey water, and it affects our groundwater, and then our water bodies, and the accompanying flora and fauna. And then what happens? In turn, it comes back and hits us. So by using, you know, things like bioenzymes and other chemical-free substitutes, we'll be preserving the health of our ecosystem. But to talk about this, Ashraf, we will need another session, but I just want to underline the fact that we need to be mindful about the products we use, you know, like from the toothpaste, soap, so whatever the clothes you wear, just be mindful.
Individual choices matter. That's what you said. We've spoken about what governments can do. So since we are speaking about individual choices, could you talk a little bit more about how ordinary citizens like you and me can deal with this problem?
See, with a nation, with our population, I think, you know, citizens, if we don't do our part, no, I mean, there's nothing in the world, I mean, no government in the world can do anything for you. So it is our moral duty, and it is our duty, forget moral or otherwise, you know, that we have to follow our individual duties very so much that you kind of make your government's job much easier. So we must all understand that our waste is our responsibility. And we all really need to think about the end of life of each product that we use. What do I mean by end of life, right? Even when I die and I'm mixed with the earth, I mean, I'm going and, I know, I mean, I'll make it compost. And I mean, you know, you mix with the earth. But what happens to the other stuff that we use, you know? Banana peel takes 3 to 4 weeks to decompose, for instance. I'm just giving you some examples to give you reference. A paper bag takes about 2 months. an aluminium can take happily about 300 years to decompose. And a disposable diaper will take 600 years to degrade. And that is the end of life that we are talking about.
Yes.
So each metal can that we throw away, each plastic bag that we use, or each bottle that we fail to recycle goes towards creating the dump in a landfill. And we don't want any more landfills. So some tips that I can give your listeners, okay, is segregate your waste judiciously. That's the least you can do. Choose non-chemical cleaners like Bioenzyme as far as possible. You know, that's another thing we've already spoken about. Then look for substitutes for plastic in your daily life. You know, we have the thin poly bags which come, even though they have been banned, still comes, you know, your way from where, I don't know. So these cannot be recycled. They block the sewers. Then they finally, you know, it causes flooding in the cities. And then finally, it makes its way into the oceans where they are affecting the underwater organisms. So for them, it's been a pandemic now for several years, you know, and this also happens because of littering. So please do not litter. Respect your public spaces. Ashok, we have such lovely ancient heritage spots which are going to seed because we don't respect our public spaces. And some more tips, you know, I mean, these are common things which have been bandied about very often, you know, like carry your own bags for shopping, carry your own bottle for drinking. You know, I have a small kit, you know, which has a bowl, a steel tumbler, a spoon that I fit into my bag whenever I travel so that I don't use disposable items. And even in the kitchen, you know, this paper towels and all is a very wasteful living, I'm saying. Just use cloth towels, reuse. In a nutshell, basically just do what your grandmothers or in some case, great grandmothers did, you know? Yeah.
Consume less, actually.
Consume less. Even if you want to consume mindfully, you know? And like I said, the book that I've co-authored, The Waste Issue, has many such tips and the science behind what I suggest. And I also have a fledgling YouTube channel where I've just started started giving tips. And I'm trying to build content there. And so there's a lot of information there.
Sure. What's the name of the channel? In case
it's called The Waste Issue. Everything is The Waste Issue, yes. And in fact, even for Hindi listeners, now I've just started a series on the digital platform called Women's Web. So that is in Hindi. So
yeah, in fact, I happen to see a video that you sent to me, and I can vouch for that. I can tell listeners that it was extremely interesting and very practical and very easy to implement tips that you mentioned in that video.
Yeah, so that's just first in the series. More to come. Hopefully, there'll be useful things that I can share.
I'm sure. So you've worked a lot with local communities, as I said earlier also. So tell us about your work around solid waste management with them. What was your experience?
So my foray into solid waste management actually started in 2002 when with my own community, you know. So when I moved into my own house in suburban Bangalore, one day I observed that a huge truck, you know, was carrying our waste. And they were taking it to be transported and dumped at the outskirts of Bangalore. And this bothered me no end because, you know, my waste is being dumped in somebody else's backyard. It's just so not fair. And so I researched and got in touch with an NGO called WasteWise, which is led by a gentleman called Mr. Anselm Rosario. He's an Ashoka Fellow who has done pioneering work by uplifting street children and getting them into mainstream society and made solid waste collection a very respectable occupation. So in the community where I lived, there were about 610 houses and we put segregation in place. Mind you, this is way back in 2002. There was a little resistance, but with awareness sessions, the transition was smooth. And we've been doing, our own composting also now. And, dry waste gets collected and all that. And much later in 2013, when the entire area of Whitefield was not looking too good, so some of us, founded the citizen movement called Whitefield Rising. And I was leading the solid waste group and where I would have awareness sessions in various apartments, gated communities and also help the tying up with the vendors. And we also interacted with the local civic administration so that there was a channel for communication. And that I find was very useful, you know, when we kind of open up these dialogues with the civic administration. And we also tied up with the anonymous group called the Ugly Indian. I'm sure you've heard of them, you know. To do spot fixes, they are called, you know, where a dirty spot or where dumping of garbage is happening, you know, you just get it cleaned with the help of the local BBMP and, you know, that's the local civic administration here. And we clear it up, paint it and make it beautiful. And so we had so many volunteers, you know, who were involved, and some as old as 75 and 80. It was so inspiring, you know. And in the time between 2004 and 13, I was involved with the tsunami rehabilitation project near Nagapattinam in Tamil Nadu, which was quite devastated by the tsunami which happened, you know, then. And I was actively involved in introducing something known as ecological sanitation or EcoSan, which is a flushless toilet, basically, and also introducing solid waste management. But an important piece of work, in my opinion, I felt that I did was to look at school sanitation, because it's a dear subject to me, because a lot of girls drop out because of lack of school sanitation.
That's right.
Yeah. That's right. Mm. And that was sometime between 2015 and 17, and where I traveled to about 5 states of the country and covered about 25 schools as a sample, you know, government, private, international schools of different boards of education, tried to understand the sanitation infrastructure and also see what is being taught in the environment education classes about solid waste. And, you know, why? Because it's so important to understand what happens to the stuff you put in the dustbin, really. So the results of the study, if anybody is interested, was published in the Clean India Journal. It's in the public domain, and you can also find it on my website, called thewasteissue.wordpress.com. And I have enlisted some best practices also there.
So was this trip that you mentioned to various schools, was that the inspiration for the book that you've written for school children? And how did you also think of extending the effort to workshops? And if I can add a third aspect to that, what actually happens in those workshops?
So the workshops and awareness programs, as I mentioned, was happening right before the book, you know, from the grassroots level. So that content was pretty much there, you know, but, you know, from apartments. So, you know, I used to tweak it a little bit for apartments to corporate India or to the man on the street. You know, basically, it's all about taking ownership of our waste. But after my study with the schools, I realized that, you know, any textbook, there was barely a line or two that was mentioned about waste, you know, while we talk about lofty things like ozone. I mean, I'm not, underplaying those issues. Those are also very important, ozone layer and all that. But waste is so basic in our lives, you know, that people should know about it. Tell me. Did you learn about any solid waste management in school?
Not a lot, but of course I was in school a very, very long time ago.
So I was also that long back, and I remember I learned nothing, okay? So that's when I thought of, you know, collating this information and putting everything in sequence and in a very fun and creative way. And I'm so, so grateful to my co-authors, you know, Padma Shastri, who's an educationist, and I had a young intern straight from school, Nivedita Rathod, who gave the book exactly what the youngsters would like in a book. You know, that's very important. It has to appeal to the younger people. And so I have something, you know, right from the history of waste to segregation to case studies, and each chapter had a fun activity. And so these are the things we do in workshops also, you know. And so we had activities that covered the subjects that students learn in school, like in English class, you would perhaps learn how to write a poem, you know, so there was some, you know, you write a poem on waste, you know, use your imagination and vocabulary. So for maths, we had designed a classroom audit, and then you draw a graph for that. And so we also had created activities for students to really do some critical thinking, you know, not give all the answers, so that there could be multiple right answers. And there were debates and DIYs and making bioenzymes is one of them. And at the cost of saying it myself, I think I'm very happy with the outcome. And I really want schools and parents to come forward to adopt it. You know, I think it's great for adults too. And you should have a look, Ashraf.
Absolutely. And so that brings me to two other questions. One is A, how can the listeners source your book? And B, if any schools or anybody else wants you or your team over for the workshops, how do they do that?
So you can contact me. I have a Facebook page, which is The Waste Issue. It's called Waste Issue. You could write to me at thewasteissue@gmail.com or also on the blog, thewasteissue.wordpress.com. There is a contact, there's a contact where you can write to us. And any which way, you know, you can just Google. And these books are also available on Amazon if required. Yeah.
Right. So, Sangeeta, here's a question that I always ask my guests at the end. Why do you do this work?
I have never thought about it, honestly. But I think it has something to do with my childhood. I grew up in the northeast of the country for a long time in Arunachal Pradesh, where my father, an army man and an engineer, was posted when it was just virgin land. And then I had a major part of my schooling in the hills of the Nilgiris. So I always felt a special connection with the earth, or Bhumi Devi, as we call her. And I have seen my grandmother's revere nature. And to me, there is no greater religion than caring for the earth. And so much so that I have explored Vedic ecology, and I've also written a book called Celebrating the Earth, Stories about Prithvi. So it bothers me when the earth is treated badly. And if I can create an awareness, even with a few individuals, to make a change, I think my purpose on earth is served. I'm just trying to do my wee bit, you know, leave alone, you know, irrespective of legislation, laws, and all that. It's just something which comes from within me that I think I must communicate to other people. So, you know, change has to come from within each person. And let me just share a shloka in Sanskrit that my grandmother had taught me, you know. It goes like this. Says, Samudra Vasane Devi, Parvatastana Mandale, Vishnupatni Namastubhyam, Padasparsham Kshamasvami, which means, you know, O Mother Earth, you who have the oceans as your garment, mountains as your bosom, O consort of Lord Vishnu, salutations to you. Please forgive me as I would just walk on you. And, you know, that's the reverence. You know, if I walk on you, I must have, you know, you're doing such a great favor to me. So just forgive me for that. So it's a beautiful sentiment. And to answer your question, why do I do this work? I think it's just my dharma and karma, to put it a little philosophically.
Beautiful. Sangeeta, it was an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. We see it all around us, but perhaps don't give as much thought as we should to solid waste and its management. So thank you for making us think about it.
Thank you so much. It has been my pleasure. And I would really enjoy this conversation with you, Ashraf. Thank you so much.
Thank you all for listening. Please visit allindiansmatter.in, that's allindiansmatter.in, for more columns and audio podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Ashraf Engineer, that's ashrafengineer, and All Indians Count, that's allindianscount. Search for the All Indians Matter page on Facebook. On Instagram, the handle is All Indians Matter. Email me at editor@allindiansmatter.in. Catch you again soon.